out of structure. Let's do it.
We have time to run walls. If it's first and 10, walls. Or any down and distance. I don't care.
The game is over, and the Chiefs' kingdom has firmly planted its flag on top of football's highest summit. And Chiefs' kingdom, get ready to welcome your champions.
Welcome, Chiefs' kingdom, to another edition of the Out of Structure podcast. Your Kansas City Chiefs are headed to the Super Bowl once again.
Woo!
17-7 over the Baltimore Ravens. They controlled this game from beginning to end in what is probably becoming routine for some of you. It still feels surreal to those of us that have followed this team for decades. It is mind-blowing the run that this team is on, and maybe we should expect it by now, but this one feels different.
Yes, it does, Stags. Yes, it does. It feels very different because they went on the road. They defied odds. They were underdogs in both games. They're underdogs in the Super Bowl still, even though that was kind of a funny storyline as it went from 2.5 to 1 point very quickly like that. The bettors are smarter than that, taking Mahomes as the underdog. But man, this has been a wild season, a wild ride. And honestly, this does feel like a nice bow on top of just a roller coaster getting to the Super Bowl. Now, the Super Bowl is just going to be a fun event. We'll get there. We'll talk about it next week. We got 2 weeks, right, Stags? Let's just reflect on this because it is a season that I truly did not think we would be here. I know you maybe have heard that from people these last few weeks, right? Maybe someone said that when they got to the AFC Championship. Maybe someone said that when they got to the divisional round. I don't necessarily agree that I didn't see them getting to those points. I actually did not see them getting past the Baltimore Ravens in the AFC Championship and getting to the Super Bowl. I chose against them, Stags, and I was wrong. I've never been happier to be wrong. Like I know it's so cliche to say, but it's a beautiful thing.
I'm usually happy when you're wrong, but this is even better. No, I didn't dare let myself believe fully that they were going to be at this point. I thought in the back of my head, hey, this has been a tough year. Expectations should be a little bit lower. Getting to the AFC Championship game, to me, represented a successful season. I didn't expect them to beat the Ravens, but I said if it was close, this team's going to find a way to win. And you know, it ended up being fairly close. But again, this team felt like they were in control of this game this entire time. I don't know how you bet against them at this point, given what we've seen. And in many ways, this is like a movie script. And every championship season, every season in some ways, it is like a movie script. And sometimes it's believable and sometimes it's not. But some of the best years, some of the Super Bowl championship years, they've had some really tough times that have hardened them, that have, you know, forged in steel or whatever analogy you want to use. They've come together and it's kind of made them a better team when they've had rough times during the regular season. And even in those years in the playoffs when they've gotten down by big amounts and had to come back and fight through that, it's gotten to the point where they've seen everything. This is an experienced team that knows exactly what it takes to win in the playoffs and to win Super Bowls. And they've adapted in different ways to make that happen.
Well, they just proved that, right? I mean, that's one thing that championship experience obviously goes a long way, because I think in each of these last two games, you saw reasons why Baltimore, why Buffalo were not the teams advancing. This last game specifically, right? The penalties, you know, some of the undisciplined, you know, taunting, the unsportsmanlike conduct Kelsey got Van Noy on. That goes into that. And another part of that is, you know, Justin Tucker, you know, thinking that, you know, and I, you know, I know we don't know for sure, you know, exactly where he was supposed to be, why he was there. In my opinion, you know, Jim Harbaugh is a, you know, he's a gamesman, you know, that Harbaugh family is a football, you know, they love to, do their little tricks and details. And he probably said, hey, you know, just go mess with them a little bit, you know, just, you know, go, uh, go see what Mahomes and Kelce are doing. You know, play a little. You know, see how they react to it. And I love how Mahomes and Kelce, and even saw MBS kicking that tee around. All that little stuff, man. Like, you don't want to do that. And the Chiefs were locked in the whole time, right? They weren't playing those little games, and that's what you saw. And that is where I do want to say, this team, I thought, you know, I tweeted this earlier this year, you know, it felt like a 2017 season or 2021 season where there were just rough stretches where it felt like, okay, this team is not going to get all the way. The train is going to come to a screeching halt at some point, and there's going to be some real changes this offseason to correct that stuff. There's still could be real changes this offseason, Stags, but the train never stopped rolling. And that's a testament to Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, Steve Spagnuolo, Chris Jones, the great players on this team. You know, they just overcame that all, right? And that's, we really are truly living in a amazing time to be a Chiefs fan, because all those guys are at the top of their game.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You talked about Ravens coach John Harbaugh. He was previously a special teams coach. So pretty sure he knows where the kicker is supposed to be in pregame warm-ups. Those are details that wasn't an accident. And yeah, there's a lot of chatter going on about how it's not unusual that he was in that spot. But clearly the Chiefs felt like it was unusual. The way that they reacted was petty. It was childish, but it was awesome in the same way. So I'm perfectly fine with that. I think great teams and great players, you know, watch the Michael Jordan documentary on Netflix. They find things to use as bulletin board materials, to use as fuel, to use to get them fired up. And you use the word poke the bear. They poked the bear, and the Bills did it. And Mahomes, you know, you could hear the emphatic nature of his post game comments against the Bills and saying they asked for it. They got it, right? And you know what? The Ravens asked for it, and they're not a team that used to being pushed around. This Kansas City Chiefs team was the aggressor. They were the bully. They were the tougher, more physical team, which is insane to say, because that's not what we expected going into this game or into this season.
Well, no, and that's where it was just Andy Reid's game plan and Spag's game plan too, but just the overall execution of coming out right of the gate and taking the crowd out of it by getting a stop early, right? Getting a touchdown right out of the gate. You know, obviously the Ravens did get that that big touchdown drive on their second possession, but the Chiefs answered right back. You know, that's just a great way to come in on a road playoff game. I mean, you can't ask for anything better, because, you know, anyone watching that pregame leading up to it, man, it felt like that crowd was about to be a ruckus, you know, about to be, you know, and it didn't really seem like it was all that. And it's probably because the Chiefs really did come in and take some energy out and really put some anxiety into the crowd by just looking great out of the first half, and then putting all the onus on Lamar, on the Ravens offense, and Spags, this defense, to kick some butt. So that was, it was a really fun
one. They had the chance to make it even crazier. I mean, if you remember, the first two drives for the Chiefs were touchdowns. The third drive, they got down to the Baltimore 13-yard line, went for it on fourth and one, and did not make it. They were trying to go for the juggler there early in this game. I mean, that's an aggressive play call. That's not something that the Chiefs always do. But for them to go for it there instead of kicking the field goal really says something about the way that they game plan this thing out. Was, let's get up early, let's take the crowd out of it, let's force the Ravens to think they have to pass more, because that's something else I want to talk about. First of all, if you want to react to that, you can, but also let's talk about the running game after that.
Yeah, because when you look at it, early in the game, they went for it on the fourth down in the opening drive too, right? And got that one. It was a great play by Travis Kelce. Like, they were aggressive out of the gate. You're right. They did want to score, put the pressure on the Ravens off the bat, and they didn't want to settle for field goals. That's something that we've kind of seen them do recently. But, you know, they did set up the Chiefs defense to kind of have to just, you know, sit down and play stout and kind of, you know, contain the Ravens offense from scoring too much, right? And the Chiefs defense did it. They did it, you know, A to Z after that second drive, right? It was really one drive, and from there, the Chiefs defense stepped up.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that one drive was a busted coverage where Nick Bolton ends up on Zay Flowers deep. After that, the Ravens went fumble, punt, punt, end of half, punt, punt, fumble, interception, and then garbage time field goal. This game was over. Like, that is a ridiculous performance by this defense. And so many of those were, you know, three and out, four and out, five and out, three and out, you know, three and out. This was a dominant defensive performance.
Well, and the Ravens really, you know, set them up a little bit, right? You know, they kind of got behind and stopped, you know, using the traditional run game. But even when they did run, I mean, these Chiefs defenders stepped up. You know, a guy like, you know, and I know we're not into the winners and losers yet, but there are, you know, guys like Drew Tranquil, guys like, you know, George Karloftis, you know, guys like Justin Reed, you know, really did step up. And so it was one of those things where, like, Stags, I really came out of this game like, we are watching like all-time defensive unit. Like, one of those things where, like, you can say, oh, remember the 15 Broncos, remember the, you know, Legion of Boom Seahawks, you know, remember the, you know, there's early, you know, thousands Patriots, you know, and those runs with Tom Brady, like, well, the, you know, this unit.
Those are 2000 Ravens, right? And the yeah. 85 Bears and the, like, this.
Like, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I did say those to like some of my friends and I was like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't go all the way there. But I think the 15 Broncos is a good one. You know, where it's just like, this team really is like a special group playing together, the coaching staff, the DBs. And that's where Spags deserves a lot of credit, but like Dave Merritt, you know, golly, I mean, he's definitely going to be a defense coordinator at some point. And, you know, Spags is thinking about, you know, hanging it up or something at some point, you know, I'd hope Merritt sticks around till then, cause he'd be a great DC. So yeah, I don't know, Spags. Yeah.
These defensive backs were ridiculous. Once again, I mean, we've talked all season about McDuffie and about Legarius Sneed. They were lights out. That play by Sneed is one of the biggest plays you will ever see. That should go down in playoff lore one of the most epic defensive plays ever. Forcing the fumble on Zay Flowers, you know, right after Flowers taunted him and got a penalty out of the deal. I mean, that was a game-saving, season-saving play in some ways. Like, that is a turning point of all turning points. And again, just the clutch nature of that is unbelievable. But those guys were hitting. They're probably the best tackling secondary in the league, and the coverage was such that nothing was easy for the Ravens other than Zay Flowers on Nick Bolton.
Yeah, and again, even that play, you know, Leo Chenal blitzes, should have been able to bring Lamar down, right? Yeah. And should have at least got, you know, not been able to let him get that pass off. You know, that was kind of the cool thing about this game, is it really was just, you know, player execution that, you know, was the only reason this Ravens team got plays. And Spags really did put his team in great positions throughout the game. I did think it was poetic though with Sneed's fumble, right? Like, McDuffie's been the forced fumble playmaker guy this year all year, when we kind of thought maybe he'd be the coverage guy, and Sneed's been the coverage guy all year. But then in this game, McDuffie is the one that's locking up. You know, he had two third down pass breakups, or maybe it was one of them was third down. The other was just an important one at in the red zone. Just awesome to see these corners be so versatile, right? Just like,
and
do so many things
on that play when Sneed forces that fumble. That ball's free in the end zone. That could have just as easily been a touchdown for the Ravens. Yeah. McDuffie came flying in to cover that thing up, in between a couple other players. So, you know, there's those little details, those little things that could have gone the other way that hinge every single game. But I felt like there was a lot of those in this game. And the Chiefs made the plays they needed to make time after time.
Yeah, no, it really was just awesome to watch this defense. It's something that we talked about, I think, on this podcast, right? Like, it'd be fun to see this team ride the defense, you know, go on this, you know, magical run, you know, like a Spags Giants run in 07, you know, where the offense really maybe isn't doing as much. This defense really is carrying the team, but we do have to still, you know, respect the fact that Patrick Mahomes turned a dial at some point. And it might have been that Christmas Day game, right? Where, and I think we've kind of heard some players talk about it, where since then, you know, this offense has operated at an impressive level of clean football, right? Mahomes has not thrown an interception since that Raiders game. That's four starts straight without an interception. On top of that, he hasn't had a turnover-worthy play, according to PFF, in those four games. It's the longest stretch of his entire career without a turnover-worthy play. It was tied last week with three. Now he's done it, four in a row. So three straight playoff games without a single turnover-worthy play where he is not putting the ball in harm's way. And before, you know, we talk about this game specifically, just his overall playoff career has just been absurd at this point because we've gotten to 17 games. It's a full regular season now.
Okay.
4,800 passing yards, 460 rushing yards, 39 passing touchdowns, 5 rushing touchdowns. So 44 total touchdowns, 7 interceptions in the postseason against the best of the best. And you're talking about a lot of those games are not in the wild card. They're against either divisional round or AFC championship or Super Bowl opponents where it truly is the best teams available. That's all I got to say. Freaking absurd.
And yeah. Really, there's been one bad loss in that stretch. Two overtime losses in AFC championship games, one loss in the Super Bowl, 14-3, now right up there with a chance to break or overtake some other records in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, because he is one postseason win away from passing Peyton Manning for third all time for playoff wins quarterback. Peyton Manning. I mean, come on. Two touchdown passes from passing him from the same guy for fifth all time and passing touchdowns in the playoffs. And he's only 163 yards from passing John Elway for eighth all time. And also four rushing yards away from passing Elway for sixth all time in rushing yards in the postseason. That was Clay.
Legends as a quarterback, Peyton Manning is one of those that's just an all-timer, right? Like you,
right, because he played for so long.
Yeah, but he's also just like one of the benchmarks for quarterbacks that you know. Tom Brady is a benchmark for winning Super Bowls, and Peyton Manning is one of the benchmarks for just all-time great quarterback play, cerebral quarterback play, efficiency, touchdown scoring. To pass him and to pass Elway in the same game, potentially, Mahomes has even an average Super Bowl. He's gonna break all of those marks, and it's really crazy. So, in case there was ever a doubt, you saw on the field the difference between a Patrick Mahomes and a Lamar Jackson. And Lamar Jackson is a tremendous player. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to insult his game whatsoever. He was the one player that I feared the most for the Chiefs coming into this game. He should be the league's MVP this year. But you saw some of the things that make Mahomes Mahomes and the things that make Lamar Lamar. That's a big part of why the Chiefs won this game. What are some things that you noticed about the difference between the two? I got a couple that I thought of.
Well, yeah, no, I think this is the thing. It's a huge stage. You know, there's a lot going on. Both defenses are very good. It does take like a very, very good quarterback to win these games. Like it, you know, that's why, you know, the people that are, you know, they talk about like Josh Allen, you know, still played better than Patrick Mahomes. It's like, you know, it is so hard to win these games, and Mahomes needs to get credit for winning these games. And the things he does is he is just consistent from start to finish, right? I mean, you know, in this game particularly, he started, 10 for 10 passing, Mahomes did, just was absolute nails, never wasted a drop back, right? And that opening script was great, but even past that, you know, into, you know, the end of the second quarter, you know, they got 17 points, and he was still dicing up the Ravens defense. You know, should have had a freaking touchdown on the screen pass. The Trey Smith holding call was absolute horse. And so,
yep,
you know, you have a very efficient offense in the first half, and like, you have to be able to do that like over and over. You can't just be able to do it for two plays and maybe not third play and you know, be nickel and diming. And then, you know, maybe when it's there one play, you know, not take it and then go for the big shot, you know, force it. And I do think Lamar was a little bit of like, hey, you know, there were some stretches where it's like, okay, you know, he's going to start putting it on. And then, you know, he just had a few other dropbacks where, you know, he just wasn't playing within the rhythm of the offense and was trying to do too much. And we've seen Mahomes do that, right? But Mahomes has gotten past that. And that's why this is a legendary run. But But yeah, I think you did see the difference between a really good quarterback and a legendary quarterback on Sunday with some of those things.
Yeah, it was consistency. It was the turnovers, right? Just the back-breaking turnovers. For me, the biggest thing that stood out to me was the pocket presence, like just the ability to sense pressure.
Right.
To
both teams were getting pressure. Like both teams were getting in there a little bit.
Yeah, but Mahomes has this innate ability to move and know when to take off and know when to roll out to avoid pressure. There's a reason he doesn't take very many sacks, and it's not because he has an elite offensive line in front of him. It's because he knows how to avoid the sack at all costs. Lamar Jackson, you just watched one play. Charles O'Manihue, probably his one of his biggest plays of the season, gets loose. Lamar is standing there holding the ball forever. Finally, O'Manihue comes loose, and Lamar has no idea he's coming. Just absolutely no clue. I feel like if Mahomes was in the same situation there, it's not a strip sack. It's he's stepped up in the pocket, or he's taken off running, or he's done something to avoid that situation. Now, not to say it's impossible for Mahomes to take a strip sack. It's happened before. It just feels like that pocket presence, that ability to sense what's going on around you, Mahomes is just on a different level.
No, 100%. It honestly is kind of a cool, like, right direct comparison, because I think Lamar gets, like, you know, unnecessarily labeled as a, you know, oh, he's going to run out of the pocket. Maybe he's not going to hang in there. And I kind of talked about this last week, but like he actually hangs in there too much a little bit, like you're just talking about. And it leads to this kind of stuff where, especially when you have a great defensive backfield that is covering well, that is not making the throwing windows, you know, appetizing, right? You know, Lamar is not jumping at the opportunity to throw these tight windows and he keeps holding the ball. Yeah, it led to, you know, I think Tranquil chased him down at one point for a throwaway in a big spot. You know, it leads to, you know, Karloftis got that sack at that on that one point because he kind of, you know, tried to hang in there and I also think the Ravens offense didn't do a good enough job of giving him options quickly. You know, there was a lot of times where all the routes were downfield and he just like was kind of like it was a running. Well, and that is maybe the thing here is that as I talk through it is like, they a lot of times might trust Lamar to be the check down with his legs, and the Chiefs defense pass rush wise might have just been so good at containing him, not allowing him to get out into space, that, you know, on those plays where, you know, they got pressure so quickly, he wasn't able to make a move and get out of it because everyone can join so well. So again, it was just absolute masterclass by Spags and just everybody involved defensively.
Yeah. And we alluded to it earlier, but also I was really impressed by the way the Chiefs defended the run. Again, if you look coming into this game, you worry about Lamar Jackson running the ball. But this is a team that put up 229 yards rushing the previous week against the Houston Texans, which is not a bad defense. Lamar had 100 of those, but that's still a good game out of three other running backs on that Baltimore team. The Chiefs didn't allow the Baltimore running backs to get going literally at all. Gus Edwards had 20 yards and Justice Hill had three. Lamar Jackson only ran for 54 to lead the team. Really only broke one, that 121 yard rush. Holding this Baltimore Ravens team to 81 yards rushing, even as tough as it was for the Chiefs to run the football, they had 89 yards rushing. They essentially outrushed the Ravens and outrushed their running backs by a lot if you were to take Lamar out of the picture.
Right, and that is where it you do have to shout out guys like Drew Tranquil. You know, a guy like Leo Chenault, you know, stepped up in the run defense as well. They were doing a lot of base defense. You know, Nick Bolton, you know, had his plays, even though I don't think it was Bolton's best day. He did have a really good coverage play at one point, right, where he should have had an interception. He dropped it. That was good on him for picking up the guy coming across and you know, getting in front of it, not allowing that to be a completion on third down. But – you know, I was looking through my PFF stats, it stood out to me that Moulton didn't really make a play, and he was without a PFF stop, which is that category that, tackles that constitute failure for the offense. Yeah. Right. Yeah. He had eight against Miami. It was kind of a passive game for him, maybe a little bit, where he wasn't maybe on the attack as much as you'd like to see against the Niners. I bet you'll see that be a little different because they don't have the same kind of threat. He loves those kind of, I mean, the Miami offense is kind of like the Niners offense, right? So that's where, you know, Nick Bolton's going to be in his element in Super Bowl, I imagine. But Drew Tranquil was in his element here, just playing all over the field, right? I mean, he really was just I think I saw Lewis Rick even tweeted that he was kind of like the MVP of the weekend or something. He thought he was that good.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anything else on the, just because I do want to touch on the coverage, because I have a few cool coverage things to touch on here. Because I mean, post game, Legarius Sneed, which, you know, he's a quiet guy, right? It's cool to see him kind of come out of his shell a little bit, you know, talk more with like guys like Aaron Ladd. Shout out Aaron Ladd down in, I mean, Pete was in Baltimore, so shout out Pete, but Aaron Ladd was on the field getting some of the videos. PJ Green of Fox, my guy, he was also getting some of the stuff. And he had the tweet actually where I saw, and I don't know who exactly got the quote, it might have been Aaron video, but Legarius Sneed said the defense basically just played two coverages today, cover zero and tango. And so what cover zero is, we all probably know, right, is just no safeties. Every guy just man for himself. And if you don't have a guy you're covering, you're going after the quarterback. So it's, you're blitzing. But tango basically means we're going to play zone, but it's going to be a tight, like an aggressive zone. So it might look like man coverage, because once your receiver commits to a certain route, I know he's my guy and I'm committing to him and another guy, but it could be another receiver depending on how the route combination goes. Right. And so, but it's an aggressive thing. It you know, it's not something that they're playing this off zone coverage, and you saw it, man. And, you know, when they were doing it, that's why you saw Lamar a lot, you know, checking down, you know, right. That was a lot of their biggest pass plays, where Gus Edwards, you know, taking a pass real quick and going up the sideline. And you know, some of the other times Justice Hill made a play, maybe. It was because these DBs were not allowing anything down the field. And it was because Spags said, look, guys, I'm not going to make it complicated. I'm not going to be, hey, do this play, then do this, you know, switch it up. We're going to make it complicated up front for Lamar, and y'all in the back end, just do your thing. I'm either call this. Like, that's in Spags we trust. That's what they mean by that. That's why they all love Spags, because that does make them play faster, more aggressive, smarter. They're not thinking about as much. And I guarantee you it makes a difference for the DB's mentality throughout the game.
Yeah. It was really impressive. And again, it wasn't even just McDuffie and Sneed. Those guys were amazing. But Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams, those guys still made plays, and they still were tight in coverage. They still knocked the ball away. PFF had the stat line here through the three playoff games so far against those two, Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams combined, 9 targets, 3 catches, 21 yards, only 2 yards of yak, and a pass broken up, and the longest catch was 8 yards. That from your third and fourth corners, whatever they are, that's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, think about how many times in Chiefs history, you know, it's the second or third corner, you know, that is just the reason, you know, the Chiefs defense gets exploited. And now they have these guys both drafted on day 3, you know, both just in their second year, just shutting it down when they need to. I mean, obviously, you know, they're not going against the best of the best, but, you know, that's the point. You know, they're supposed to, you know, be, you know, doing this kind of, I mean, they're not supposed to be doing this maybe, but they're, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, playing the weaker players and maybe having the advantage there. And they've definitely taken advantage. It's cool to see also that they've split time. If you look at their snap count, they almost are identical through 3 games. Mm-hmm. They really have rotated.
Well, a couple more big picture things that I think it's just crazy to think about. There's so many mind-blowing stats from this team and this run that they're on. I love Mitch Holthus on Twitter saying this Chiefs roster now has a combined 343 playoff wins. I mean, I remember the day when that was, you know, probably under 10, back when they hadn't won a playoff game in years. 343 playoff wins on the roster. And this is even crazier. The rookies and second-year players are now 60-0 in the playoffs combined, those that contribute.
Yeah.
They know nothing other than winning in winning playoff games and winning Super Bowls.
Yeah, and what does that do? That just builds confidence. That's why Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams can play confidently against whoever they're matched up with. You know, that's why a guy like Pacheco, you know, can just, you know, run hard, free, you know, because he's been at that stage. It's not, you know, it's not too big. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Also, something else ridiculous, because Peter Schrager is a friend of Arrowhead Pride, and he was on part of my take this week, And he reminded everybody that this guy picked the Chiefs and the Niners to be in the Super Bowl before the season, which is, you know, obviously impressive.
Wow.
But if he were to pick correctly, which he did choose the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, he picked the Chiefs, Trent McDuffie, to have a pick to seal the game. That was his prediction before the season in the Super Bowl. It would be the sixth year in a row he has chosen the Super Bowl champion correctly preseason.
No way.
Like, that is nuts.
Is that actually true?
Yeah, no, he's had, you can, there's a thing on Twitter, you can see his videos of it, because, you know, he's been on Good Morning Football all that time. And that's the thing, Peter Schrager was like the first on Mahomes. Like, he was saying it from the first training camp that, like, this guy is going to light the world on fire. Like, you guys don't even know. Like, he was so correct. Like, he was the first national media guy that really, like, went out on a limb. Because I'm sure all the national people were hearing the chatter from Kansas City, but I doubt all of them wanted to be like, all right, like, are we really going to, you know, believe, you know, the hype, right? He was the first one, really, from the national media scene. And so he's chosen the Chiefs in that time, the years they won, right? And he chose Tom Brady that year, right? And he chose the Eagles last year. Like, it is crazy. So shout out Peter Schrager. That dude knows ball. Let's just say that.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. That, we need to get some gambling advice from him going forward.
Right.
You know, some other stats that we noticed, Harold Kuntz pointed out, the Chiefs have 14 playoff wins over a six-year span. That's an NFL record.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, part of that is due to the fact that they did not get the first-round bye this year, right? So they had an extra playoff game to win. But it's really a remarkable run, and right up there with some of the greatest dynasties of all time. They just passed the Patriots and the Buffalo Bills that just couldn't get over the hump, but we're in the Super Bowl every year. This has been a historic run, and there's no reason to think that it's over.
Right, exactly. Because and shout out Pete, I tweeted it after the game. But you know, he just was kind of making the point last week before the game, like, you know, if the AFC doesn't do it this year, if they don't beat the Chiefs this year, you know, this team is ready to reload at the offensive skill position group. And just on offense in general, this offseason, mm-hmm. Yeah, the defense might take some hits, right? But you cannot rely on defense to be year-to-year great, right? You have to rely on your offense and hope that your defense makes plays. You know, defense fluctuates year-to-year no matter what. It's just how it is. This Chiefs offense was going to get better. And so if they win the Super Bowl this year, I'm very confident that they could be even better, more explosive, more consistent on offense throughout the regular season, getting them a home playoff game again, and, you know, and it could turn into another, you know, playoff run. So it's just this Chiefs, it was supposed to be the down year, Stags. It really was.
And it was a hard path. I mean, the fact that they've had to go through the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Ravens, and then if they happen to beat San Francisco, Aaron Schatz, NFL on Twitter, points out the Chiefs will have the hardest path to win a Super Bowl through four games based on DVOA if they were to win the Super Bowl against the San Francisco 49ers. So the hardest path ever, even harder than the New York Giants, which I believe was a wild card team that went and won the Super Bowl in 2007. This is, again, it's just historic stuff and not cheap by any means. If you see anybody on social media, which I have seen plenty, that have already said that the Chiefs didn't earn it or they were gifted this path, this has been a brutally difficult season and a brutally difficult playoff run, and they've done nothing but rise to the occasion when it mattered the most.
Yeah, and to that point, like, you've seen people – And maybe it is like a straw man, you know, I hate if it is, but like, I do feel like some people are saying, well, you know, this is the worst Chiefs team of the Mahomes era. And maybe that's to my point. Maybe I was kind of saying that with the offense, it's going to improve. But my thing is, like, you could make an argument that this, you know, with the defense being as good as it is, it's like one of the most complete teams because the run game, you know, is probably as good as it's ever been with the Chiefs, you know, in terms of how they can control games with it. And so, you know, yeah, you could make the argument this is actually one of the most complete teams, and yet, you know, you could also say maybe it's one of the worst offenses. It's just funny. It's funny.
I think for a lot of the season, it was the worst offense that they've had in the Mahomes era, but it is the best defense they've had in the Mahomes era. And now the offense has learned to play within itself, and there's a winning combination there. So let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. In the meantime, Ron, do you have a player that's played for both the 49ers and the Chiefs? So there's so many different players we can choose from.
I know. We haven't even talked about the Chiefs are facing the Niners in the Super Bowl, the 49ers. We'll get to that on the other side. We got a few questions on it. And, you know, obviously, guys, we got a couple weeks. So, you know, we got next show to really dig in. But here we go. I am an NFL player, and I was originally drafted by the Chiefs and played with Mahomes, but did not stay in Kansas City past my rookie deal. Played with Jacksonville, played with Houston, and eventually ended up with San Francisco. And that was the last team I played on. So who am I?
We'll get to that. Plus your questions after the break. So stick with us on the Out of Structure podcast. And we're back talking about your AFC champion, Kansas City Chiefs, on the Out of Structure podcast. I'm Matt Sagner here with Ron Kopp Jr. As always, Ron's trying to stump me here with a player that played for the Niners and the Chiefs. So you said he was drafted by the Chiefs, left after his rookie deal, went to two other squads, and is now on the 49ers. I believe this is wide receiver Chris Conley.
Yeah, I was trying to hide the fact that he's on it now. Like, I was trying to skirt around that. Like, he's not an active player. Like, trying to not say that, because, yeah, it is Chris Conley. And he made that play out of nowhere for them. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, shit, Chris Conley. Let's hope I sneak that by you. Yes, no, it is. Yeah, there's so many players to choose from. I was hoping you'd overthink that one. But
all right,
Chris Conley still playing at 31 years old, still making plays.
That's surprising. Next week the question should just be: this is a quarterback that played for both the Chiefs and the 49ers. And that's the question. All right, let's get to some questions here, mailbag questions. Here's one that we stole, which I love doing sometimes. Other than to get Mahomes, which is probably the second greatest draft pick in the history of the NFL, this is from Robert Mays on Twitter, I'd argue Andy Reid hiring Steve Spagnuolo in 2019 is the most important move of this Chiefs dynasty. It set them up for the second act. Would you agree or disagree with that statement?
I disagree, and that's why I wanted to bring this up. Because Robert Mays, first of all, great NFL writer, podcaster for The Athletic. Mm-hmm. Him and Nate Tice very much are Spagnuolo appreciators. You know, they very much understand that he's one of the best defensive play callers, and they break it down as well as anybody about kind of what he does well. And I understand where he's coming from, but I really think if you want to break it down, I really think the Tyreek Hill trade was still more important in terms of setting them up for the second act, because Steve Spagnuolo is a great defensive coordinator, but my thing is he did need a few more pieces to get them over the top. And if they were to pay Tyreek Hill, there's no way they were getting those pieces that they have now. That they got Trent McDuffie because of the Tyreek Hill trade. Guys like, I think, Leo Chenault, guys like, in the draft, there's just more draft capital they had to get these guys. And that's the thing. Spags was going to be a great defensive coordinator either way. And, probably we're going to be very good if they sign Tyreek and Spags develop the team they had. But I don't think the defense reaches this level. And that might have, cost them this year, right? And that might have cost, maybe if it didn't cost them, even if it didn't cost them last year, which it could have. Last year, it could have went downhill last year, not having some of the talent they did, not having the second first round pick. But, yeah, I still think the Tyreek Hill trade is second most important. But Spags is probably third. What do you think, Stag?
I hadn't thought about Mahomes being the second best draft pick in the history of the NFL. It's nice framing there by Mays. I mean, this is it's hard to argue against it now. You remember Brett Veach saying, I watched Patrick Mahomes and he was the best player I've ever seen. I mean, what a premonition, what a visionary statement by Brett Veach in his evaluation of Mahomes early on. I assume the number one draft pick would be Brady, just given the fact that he was a sixth rounder and went on to win more Super Bowls than anybody else, right?
Yeah, but I don't know if you were going here, but I think that's kind of BS, right? Like, that's not a great draft pick. You didn't know, Mahomes is a great draft pick because of what you're saying. Veach knew this guy was going to be great, sacrificed a chunk of capital to do it, right? No one sacrificed anything. No one stood on the table for Tom Brady. It was a sixth-round pick.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they would have. I think they've admitted as much. They said if we really thought he was going to be Tom Brady, we would have taken him way before the sixth round.
Right.
And I think that's a good point. But I think I would go with Steve Spagnuolo over the Tyreek Hill trade because well, first of all, I love that the Tyreek Hill trade is even in the conversation because when that trade happened, it was tough to swallow for a lot of us. I mean, it was a really we knew it was a big haul of picks, but it was one of those moments where it's like this is not going to be that we knew it wouldn't be the same Chiefs team after that, after he left. There have been a lot of times since then where I've thought, man, if they still had Tyreek Hill, they'd still be putting up 30, 40 points a game. And they're not. But getting Steve Spagnuolo and getting rid of Bob Sutton was a pretty seismic shift in this franchise. And I think that was a really smart hire, obviously. We weren't sure of it at the time, but Andy Reid had a vision there. And I think that change was really, really important. I think if Tyreek Hill trade never happened, the defensive personnel wouldn't be as good, but the offensive personnel would still be incredible. So, right. You know, anytime you have a player of the year type player on offense, still, I still like our chances of having a dynasty here with a mediocre defense and a Tyreek Hill led offense, or a Tyreek Hill, you know, making plays on offense. So it would have been very different. I'll say it that way. I don't know for sure that, that it would have resulted in the same run, but it still would have been a lot of fun, and they still would have won quite a bit, I think, even if the defense never reached the heights that it does now.
No, it's fair. Cause I mean, you know, if you look at it in terms of like, you know, if the Tyreek Hill trade never happened, well, then you have to look at the other side. If the Spags transaction never happened, right. If they kind of maybe hired just some, you know, someone that, like, if they hired Matt House or whatever, you know, I don't know if that was. Yeah. Well, couldn't have been that. It could not have been that. No, you're right. But like, you know, there's a chance that the defense never really, you know, takes off and helps the offense in that 2019 season. Then, you know, it kind of, maybe that frustration grows, you know, as the team didn't win a Super Bowl, you know, and Mahomes is prime. So it's a good argument. It's a good argument. I think my final point, though, I think is just that, you know, it seems like with Mahomes, we have found out this year, really, that he is going to find his water, like his level of, okay, like this is what I need to do to be the best version of me, no matter what is put around him once it comes playoff time. And so, you know, I think the offense is maximizing what they have. And so if they didn't have, you know, the defense, I guess, you know, maybe, you know, the offense being as good, even with Tyreek, you know, still wouldn't matter because the defense couldn't stop, you know, whoever, you know, because the offense is going to be the offense, like you know, like you kind of said, right? Like whoever they're playing, they're going to be who they be. Uh-huh. So yeah, so it's a fun kind of thought process. But yeah, either way, I think we could all say the number one thing is the Mahomes, going to get Mahomes. I mean, that's Brett Veach. We got to just build a statue at some point for Veach.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I'm still catching a lot of grief about my disdain over the George Karlaftis draft pick and how he's turned out. He's obviously turned out way better than expected by me and by a lot of other people. So I still have to take credit for I got that one wrong. Definitely got Patrick Mahomes one right. Again, I said when he was pre-draft, he was the guy I wanted the Chiefs to take. When they traded up, I couldn't have been happier because I knew they were going to take Mahomes. And then when they did, you know, I said they're going to win multiple Super Bowls because of this guy. And that was the, you know, rare thing that I got right. So I'm going to take credit for that when I can.
I mean, you have to. I mean, this is like five victory laps we got now, or four victory laps. So we're getting tired.
I also love this question from Brandon Plank on Twitter. What defensive adjustments shut the Chiefs down in the second half, and how do we avoid that versus the 49ers? How much of that was conservative play calling versus, you know, whatever else? First of all, it was a little frustrating to watch the second half. I think the Chiefs very much dialed it down. They were not going to turn the ball back over. They were not going to throw it downfield. It was all short stuff right into the teeth of a very aggressive defense. It was running the ball, even if he was slamming into a wall. It didn't matter. They were going to run clock, control the ball, not make mistakes. That seemed very, very intentional. And it was also against a very, very good defense. Kyle Hamilton was unbelievable. Justin Madubuike was unbelievable. Like, this was a defense that was absolutely stacked and loaded, still is. And they made it very, very difficult for the Chiefs to do what they wanted to do, which is run the clock out. They figured it out. They did it. But it wasn't easy. And that was largely due to both of those factors. It was the Chiefs being conservative and the Ravens being brutal.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, that it really was conservative, in my opinion. It really was more so that. But, you know, that's the thing is, like, conservative play calling is kind of, it's not like you can't get big plays out of it. You trust your playmakers to break a tackle and get down and get more yards, right? Or it's just a safer way to try to get those plays. And it's low risk, right? But low reward, maybe, because when you're a Ravens defense, like you just kind of mentioned, all those guys flying around, they don't miss tackles, man. Like, that was, there was a few plays where, especially, oh man, I can't remember who it was, but there was one guy who caught it in the flat. And if he was just able to make that guy miss, it was a lot of space to work with down the sideline, because I think the Ravens just blitzed heavy and kind of forced a quick throw. And the guy just made a great tackle, and it came up, you know, it was 3rd and 10 after that or something.
I feel like that happened with Rashee Rice and with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if I remember correctly. But
yeah,
there was several plays like that where it was just, yeah, one, if they could break one tackle, something good happened. But that wasn't happening.
And right. And the Ravens really did, you know, they were trying to say, look, like, we're going to, you know, force you to, you know, get frustrated and try to make a play down the field because we're doing so well at wrapping up and taking away the underneath stuff. And Mahomes didn't budge, right? He kept, you know, playing conservative, kept playing safe, playing smart. And then, as we know, we haven't even touched, you know, we didn't even talk about the last play of the game, MVS getting loose. And what happens there is that, and this is a tweet I didn't get out this morning yet, but what happens there is Kelce actually stays into Chip, and all these Ravens defenders have eyes on him. And once he does that, they're all kind of like, oh, well, if he's chipping, then, like, they're kind of just like wasted, right? Like, they don't really, they kind of just stay locked in on him. And then Rice kind of makes a route over the middle too. So the one deep safety kind of comes up on him, does not even consider anyone else. And MBS just runs right past him. There's the game. Like, it really was like the Ravens just kind of, you know, attacking underneath. Mahomes kind of taking it, you know, not forcing anything. Mm-hmm. But as soon as it wasn't forced and it was just like, this is the play, because the Ravens were just banking on the Chiefs trying to go to Kelce or Rice over the middle on a 3rd and 9, try to play conservative. He said, you know, game. He said ball game.
You know, it was so poetic to see MVS come down with that ball. I feel like the placement of it, I've heard some talk about how it was kind of over the wrong shoulder, or it was not an ideal ball placement by Mahomes, but it was in a place where only MVS could catch it. It's almost like Mahomes knew he was going to fall over backwards, and he just put it, he dropped it onto his chest just to make sure he couldn't drop it. That was awesome to see. You know, we've been bagging on MVS all season, but he's been big in the last two playoff games. But I think you're right. The Ravens were hoping that the Chiefs would do what Buffalo did last week or the previous week, which is get to the point where they're frustrated. Somebody feels like they got to be the hero. Josh Allen, you know, on that last drive that ended up in the missed field goal for Buffalo, he twice tried to throw way downfield when it was completely unnecessary to do so, where he had underneath receivers. He had time to do other stuff. They had time to kill that entire clock, and they couldn't do it. So Mahomes avoided that temptation. Maybe a younger Mahomes might not have, but he certainly showed his maturity and his and then obviously that killer instinct to just go for the juggler on the very last play there. You saw the enthusiasm from Mahomes when that worked. He certainly had to wait a while to make sure MVS came all the way down with it.
Yeah.
But then the celebration was on at that point.
No, that was it was poetic. And I think you're right that, you know, it could have been a better throw, you know, because he could have just caught it, you know, over a shoulder and just kind of kept running, right? Like, it didn't have to be like a turn and catch. But I do think Mahomes likes to, he's talked about it too. And him and MBS have been off the page on this at times throughout their 2 years together, where, you know, Mahomes likes to put some air on it at times when he knows the guy has created enough separation, just because it makes, you know, it's like, hey, like, let's just get the play. Like, let's just secure the catch. You know, we don't have to worry about maybe like getting a touchdown out of it, right? Like, a, you know, where he's running full speed. Cause that, you know, maybe you risk overthrowing it more when you try to hit him perfectly in stride that deep down the field. And I think that was just, I think that was kind of the, you know, all this all year coming together, you know, all the, you know, the routes, him missing, you know, all the reps, all, you know, this is, it, as long as it kind of gets fixed, but for the right time, right? It is amazing.
Absolutely. Ed Helinski, we were just talking about the Buffalo Bills. Ed Helinski asked, in your opinion, did the Bills put up a bigger fight than the Baltimore Ravens, or was it the other way around? I'll let you answer first, but this was a good question by Ed.
Yeah, it is a good question because, you know, the Ravens defense put up more of a fight, right? You know, I think the Chiefs definitely had to overcome more against the Ravens. I mean, even when they scored, you know, Kelce had to go Superman a couple times just to keep the drive alive. And Mahomes, obviously, his touchdown throw, the back shoulder, the placement there to Kelce was just freaking ridiculous. And then the scramble, the 10-second scramble. So, like, I do think the Ravens defense definitely fought harder, and, you know, health wise, right? That makes a lot of sense. But I think overall, you know, the Bills offense pushed the Chiefs more because the Chiefs offense kind of was able to play with a 10-point lead in the second half. You know, it is different, and it is an advantage to do that, right? To have a 10-point lead in the second half against a Ravens team that never is behind like that in those spots, really.
I think that's a good case. I was about to say the Ravens, but now that I think you've convinced me or reminded me that the Chiefs felt completely in control of the Ravens game throughout. And I don't think I felt that way against Buffalo. I think I was a lot more holding my breath, especially towards the end of the Buffalo game. So, I'll go with Buffalo on that one. How about Tim Nyker? The primary reason for Kelce's postseason play compared to the last 8 weeks of the regular season. The fact that he says primary here in all caps means that we have to pick one of these three things.
Yes.
And not more, because obviously the easy answer would be all of the above. The first one is week 18, he rested and finally got healthy, reminding us that he had a week one injury that I had almost forgotten about. Option B is the opponents are more focused on Rashee Rice, giving Kelce more room to operate. Or option C, Kelce flipped a switch and he's in playoff mode now. Which of those three do you think it is?
You know, honestly, I will say A, the primary reason. I do think getting that week 18 rest, maybe not necessarily, you know, getting healthy from the week one injury, if that was nagging him all season, you know, but I just think getting that week of rest in general, allowing his body to kind of just regroup and get ready for a playoff run. You know, he did flip a switch, right? But it's clear he's moving better than he was in the regular season, in my opinion. I mean, my God, some of the, like, that catch he made where he dove back across on the 10-second scramble I just talked about. I mean, that's a play. I mean, if the guy is about to retire, he ain't making that play. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, that is a prime
body. That's 25-year-old Kelce making that.
That was crazy to me. So, yeah, I would say I think the week 18 rest just kind of gave him kind of a fresh slate to you know, attack the playoffs.
Yeah, that was obviously huge, and I won't argue that. I'm just going to say he's flipped a switch and he's playoff Kelce now, just like Mahomes has flipped a switch. And
yeah, that's fair.
You know, I think these two are historic. Kelce said before this game, he's never wanted to win more than this particular game. And so they got it done. And I think Kelce is on a different level. And playoff Kelce, playoff Mahomes is pretty stinking fun to watch.
Yeah. I was one thing I was saying during the game. I tweeted it out pretty early, but hey, it's Hall of Famers doing Hall of Famer things. And yep, that's, we got, I did underrate that again. I hand up. I love being wrong.
That touchdown this week, a lot of people pointed out, is probably going to be on both of their Hall of Fame reels. That was a pretty amazing play, all things considered. But yeah, both of the diving catch and the where he went up and grabbed it on third or fourth down this week, both of those were just absolute incredible plays, and his stat line obviously showed in the first half just complete and total dominance of this game. Second half they shut it down and he didn't really do much, but yeah, that was an incredible game by Kelce, and they're not done yet.
No, you know what the funny thing too is, like, and again, this goes to the point you always make about, you know, it doesn't really matter who they play offense or, you know, defensively, but like, who has, you know, on paper better, you know, off-ball players to kind of take away Kelce over the middle maybe. And no, he had 11 for 11 for 100 whatever yard. Like, he didn't even get a pass incompleted. Like, everything got through to him. Nothing was defended. Like, it really was amazing. Like, if yeah, this team is just, you know, when they get what they can get what they want. They just can't.
No, you're right. Then there's nobody more better equipped to stop Kelce than the Baltimore Ravens. And it didn't matter. All right. This question comes up so many times, a skill issue on Twitter. What free agent wide receiver should they go for to help Mahomes down the road? You know, there's been a lot of debate about this, and I've seen two big names and then probably a whole bunch of other guys that I'm not thinking about. Mike Evans is the one that comes up probably the most. He's an older player, but, you know, still kind of Kelce-like. He's shown the fountain of youth this year. Big receiver, gets down the field, scores a lot of touchdowns. And then Hollywood Brown is sort of a more of a speedy guy, maybe a little bit more inconsistent, but has shown flashes of big production. Are there any other candidates that you want to talk about? And then we can say which of these are our favorites.
You know, Hollywood Brown is honestly one that I have kind of maybe not taken seriously. I don't know. He's never been that my kind of receiver, but the more I think about it, you know, with the way the Chiefs, you know, operate, they also have Rashee Rice, you know, kind of in the fold as that bigger bodied guy that can do a lot of the, you know, X receiver stuff, also plus Yak. But Marquise Brown has the deep threat ability, you know, has that speed, has the playmaking after the catch ability too, but can also be the underneath guy. He's kind of he would kind of fit what the Chiefs are looking for, because I do want them to find someone that will win down the field, that will make plays down the field to complement Rice and Kelce, kind of making those underneath Yak plays. But Brown might just be able to do a little bit of both, even though obviously he's not going to go up and get anything down the field. He just has that speed to break off a corner, get vertical, create separation, and maybe be a better deep threat than a Justin Watson or a MVS. And maybe that just helps this offense a little more. But again, I think he can do more than that. I just think that's something he also has.
Yeah, I mean, there's other candidates like DJ Shark of the Carolina Panthers. You've got Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins from the Bengals that are both going to be free agents.
I'll tell you,
Mooney. I mean, there's some other candidates there. My other favorite would be Calvin Ridley. I don't think the Jaguars let him go. But sorry, is that where you were going?
No, yeah, because he is an outside guy too, but like he can do both. Right? And I think the Jaguars just misused him. I think I've talked about it on this podcast, but I think the Jaguars' offense was just, it was not creative this year. He was just the outside receiver. He either ran a go or a comeback route, like every pass route pretty much. Like he was never used in a very, you know, just versatile way. And he is a versatile receiver to me. He's a guy that can win at all three levels. And I think the Chiefs could utilize that. And he might be on the cheap because of how underutilized he was in Jacksonville, right? Like, you know, after maybe 2 years of suspension or whatever, or, you know, a year hurt, then suspended, and then he comes back and just really isn't a difference maker, might be able to get him at 29 years old at not a bad kind of contract.
All right, so Mike Evans, Marquise Brown, or Calvin Ridley, who's your number one draft pick for receivers in the free agent class?
Honestly, I think I would say Ridley out of that group just because I know he'd probably be the most reasonable contract. Because I do think Hollywood Brown is at a point in his career where he can still demand, you know, a decent deal. Mike Evans just had a great year with Baker Mayfield, and he's a Hall of Famer, so he's going to say, you know, pay up. And that's where I think we might miss out on Mike Evans, because, you know, I do think a team might just unload to help their quarterback with him. So, yeah, I'd say Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, Calvin Ridley has a chance to be a number one receiver still in this league. I don't know that the other two would really claim that at this point. Mike Evans is probably your ring-chasing veteran that you bring in for a year and help you win a Super Bowl. I'd love to see it, though.
Yeah.
Calvin Ridley's probably the right choice. I think Mike Evans would be an awful lot of fun. Another question that's coming up a ton this week, now that we found out that Charles Omenihu, who has been just really, really solid and good for this Chiefs team over the last few weeks, especially. Had the strip sack this week. Found out he tore his ACL. He told everybody he was feeling great. He was going to be ready for the Super Bowl. But if he's not going to play, Pam Rose asked, like a lot of people have been talking about, is it time for Felix Anudike-Uzomah in the Super Bowl? The rookie first-round pick, poetically Kansas City native. When the draft was in Kansas City, we were all pumped when they took him in a lot of ways. But has been relatively slow developing. What do you think about Felix as the next guy to step up in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, you know, it would be kind of cool to see, you know, after not playing most of the season. Because, again, first portion of the season, Felix, you know, made a few plays, right? He had a forced fumble, in the Jacksonville game. He had, a couple quarterback hits as week one. And then just kind of got shelled because of other guys stepping up. Charles Menehu coming off suspension. And, you know, I do think he has a long way to go a little bit to be an every down contributor. But he's going to need to be used because they did lose Charles Omeni, right? Torn ACL, confirmed. Sucks to hear that. Hopefully he can, kind of be on a good recovery timeline and be ready for the 2024 season roughly. But for the Super Bowl, Malik Herring has already kind of been eating snaps as that fifth defensive end. And so he's going to have to move up to the fourth defensive end because he is a bigger body, someone that they can trust on the edge a little more than Felix, down to down in terms of against the run. But Felix is a better pass rusher. And so if you just let him kind of just get, play loose in a third and 10, right? Whenever there's kind of an obvious pass down situation, let him kind of just get in there and tear it up a little bit, be the looper or be the guy that's, kind of being wasted, Just let him kind of just do his thing. Cause I think he has these raw pass rush moves that kind of surprise offensive linemen, in my opinion. And so I think as long as you kind of put him in right positions, he should play. And honestly, I think he could contribute a little bit cause we've seen him do it.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to say just from a poetic, movie script standpoint, that they were going to sign Frank Clark and he was going to have one magical game to help close out the Super Bowl and get another ring with Kansas City and ride off into the sunset. The most logical answer is for Felix to be the guy that steps up. He may not be a huge impact, but he could be. And I think this 49ers team is going to be really interesting. We'll talk next week a lot more, looking forward to the Super Bowl, the whole experience, the menu, the party, the game itself, and the matchup against the 49ers. But I think this is a 49ers offense that has a quarterback that you can get to. And, but they've got a lot of weapons that they can beat you with as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how they line up. We'll dig into that further. Also, with more of your questions, as always, next week, make sure you rate, review this podcast and all the ones on our network. And make sure you check out Ron and everybody's work on arrowheadpride.com as well. A lot of great analysis. It's a lot of fun covering this team as they head to another Super Bowl. There'll be the media week and everything else happening coming up. And we can't wait to watch, along with you all, this team that's been an absolute blast. So thanks for sticking with us and tuning in. We'll talk to you all next week. Well, not from Las Vegas, but we'll be watching them in Las Vegas next week.
Hey there, it's Pete Sweeney from Arrowhead Pride, and I'm excited to announce a new element of the Arrowhead Pride experience for diehard Chiefs fans. It's our brand new newsletter, Arrowhead Pride Premier. Arrowhead Pride Premier is a newsletter delivered to your inbox twice a week from me. For $50, you'll get an annual subscription packed with insider coverage from yours truly and new in-depth analysis from voices around Kansas City. It's all about what I'm seeing and hearing around the team. During the season, we'll deliver a newsletter ahead of each game to get ready for Sunday, and a newsletter after each game to unpack exactly what happened. Subscribe to Arrowhead Pride Premier today at arrowheadpride.com/subscribe.